Welcome to CS Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 159 of CS Radio. I'm J. Michael DeAngelis.
And I'm Natty Leach. I paused for a second.
Because.
For a reason.
Wait, who else?
And I'm Amy Len Kirshner.
Oh, my gosh. It's a blast from the past.
And I can't believe it's episode 159.
I can't believe
it. Just like I would say before.
I hashed it out last week. I was like, I can't believe we're going to end the season on 159.
Yeah.
Let's end on a nice.
But hey, we get to start next.
We get to
next
start with 160. That's right.
That's a way to look at it.
So, yes, indeed, it is our last episode of the 21-22 school year, the last episode of season 7. And we're so glad that Milen, who left us early in this season, could come back to help us close it out.
Season 7, winding down. I also just can't believe it's, I mean, it'll be May when people are listening to this. The semester flew by.
Yeah, graduation right around the corner, too.
So, Milen, I think the question on everyone's mind is, why did you leave us?
Where are you?
Well, right now it feels so similar and yet so different because I am coming to you from my closet, just as I did during the pandemic when we were recording from home. But yeah, I am now at a company called IDEBA Marketing, as I shared before I left, but it's been great. I'm finding that I'm leveraging a lot of my liberal arts communication skills, as well as some of my skills that I developed in career services. I'm giving a presentation next week on presentations. So kind of similar
meta.
To what I was doing in I very meta, just what we love. And yeah, just I actually had a conversation through a grapevine connection, a friend of a friend of a friend. I did a resume review yesterday as well, just as kind of a little side project because you're never bored.
That's right. Never, you know, and don't good not to let your resume review skills get too rusty.
Once people know, they'll find you.
That's exactly right. But I did have to refresh myself. I was like, I want to talk about what's the thing. And I find the career services website still very helpful. JobScan was the answer. JobScan is what I wanted to be saying.
Yes, there you go. Well, we are a public resource.
Exactly.
So
well,
what,
I'm curious,
go ahead,
you
go ahead.
Guys, though, what are the questions these days? What are people talking about? What are the kids coming in and asking about?
NFTs. We actually did have a question about NFTs.
Did we? I mean, I've seen several NFT employers crop
There's
up on Handshake, which I
have real.
Have I most? Which I have mostly approved. There was one that was just so shady. I was like, I can't in good conscience approve this.
Yeah, I've seen some way further along employers than I expected in the NFT space coming in through Handshake already.
That's interesting. I didn't even really think about the fact that you'd be vetting those employers at this point. But yeah, of course.
And what's interesting to me is that I saw them from two different perspectives. I saw employers who were more on the mining and blockchain end of things. And then all the way to the other side, actually a group of Penn alumna who formed a company where their goal was to create content that would become NFTs.
Mm.
So a series of cartoon animals that you could draw yourself and sell as an NFT.
Oh, interesting. So it was more like public facing that you as an individual could then use the service to draw or upload a document.
They were looking for artists and then their company sells these, this, you know, it's sort of like a character group, right?
Okay.
Like you can sell these, you know, wacky bunch of animals as NFTs. So they were looking for creatives.
The Galapagos gang.
Yeah, exactly. Milen's favorite.
<Please don't. laughs> They still haunt me.
The
they will always haunt me as long as they live.
So Milen, I sort of still ramble about baseball in your absence, but I don't know if you've noticed on the television, there's a new, he's not part of the Galapagos gang, but there's a new fanatic adjacent costumed mascot at the Phillies game, and he's an umpire.
Wait, I think I did see this. Is it like a grab? Is it trying to be the Phillies version of gritty, even though the Phillies already have a Fanatic? Is it adjacent to this or not really?
Well, I couldn't tell.
Is he animalistic or more humanoid?
No, he's more human. He's a cartoon human. But he's dressed like an ump, and the Fanatic was, you know, hassling him because he's an ump, I guess. So I could see the potential for some comedic situations. But in the end, I just need the Fanatic and his hula hoop-esque waistline and a hot dog cannon. And what else do I need?
Nothing.
I mean, well, yeah, he'll need the like lawnmower that he runs around on for sure.
Oh, yes, sure.
But yes. Yeah, aside from that, yeah, no, that's it. That's the limit, yeah, for sure.
I wonder if there must be a Galapagos Gang NFT that already exists.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Natty, if there does,
ooh, Natty, this is your...
I'll buy it for you. So you had a student come in and ask about NFTs?
Yeah, we've had students come in and ask about them. So it is something that is growing, not just in the public space of you thinking about what are these, but actually in the professional space as well.
I'm also curious.
Well, Michael and I were talking about the new Kevin Smith endeavor recently that he will be releasing in NFT form.
I mean, I don't want to turn this into the NFT show, though. Maybe that's where it's heading. And perhaps this is my own ignorance. But we can use the Kev. So let's look at two different examples. Let's say, so this group of women who are selling cartoon characters. So I buy the NFT image of this character, and I own the rights to that particular image, not to the character, but to that particular image. But what does it's not tangible, right?
It's also non-fungible.
Exactly.
It is non-fungible. And it exists on the internet where everything is easily replicated.
I can almost understand the company you're describing a little bit more, because at least there's a curated element where they might create it specifically for this NFT, as opposed to those things that are like, it's this meme that everybody knows, but
right,
it's an NFT.
Yeah, form. Yeah. I mean, there is certainly there's a part of my mind that goes, well, if it's a way to protect ownership of a piece of digital art, okay. But think of the energy you would have to expend to enforce that if something became a meme. But also, I don't know. What what would I do with a digital picture of, let's say, a hippo riding a skateboard?
Collect, invest.
Again, but yeah.
Reselling doesn't seem like it's the move right now.
Right. I mean, so first of all, almost every collector's market eventually bottoms out, right? Beanie Babies.
X-Men cards. Oh, wait.
Baseball cards. you know, there are certain things that retain a certain amount of value, but most people don't see returns of thousands or sometimes even hundreds of dollars on these collection fads, right? I have a lot of trading cards from my youth. Maybe one of them might be worth a couple hundred dollars, but considering the probably hundreds, if not thousands of dollars I poured into making my collection, it's not really a return on my investment. And in this, you know, I can fill my room with Beanie Babies. I could make a Beanie Baby. Looking at them, seeing them every day brings me joy, and I can share that joy with others. I mean, I guess I could look at that picture of a hippo riding a skateboard every day, but because it's online, Natty, you can go and look at that picture of a hippo riding a skateboard every day too.
And then I'll see right underneath it that it's owned by Michael DeAngelis, and I'll know it's not mine, and I'll covet it.
Oh, well, maybe. And then you and we can enter into a bidding war, I suppose. But then, you know, so Natty raised the example that Kevin Smith is releasing his next film as an NFT, which you can buy into. And he is granting people the rights to essentially remix this film, re-edit, create new content with his work as people see fit. Asterix, they've already agreed to release a sequel to this film, and the sequel to the film is just going to be a compilation of all of the things that people do with their NFT. So if I'm Kevin Smith, I see how I'm profiting off of that. right? Because I didn't see anything where if Natty, if you make a cut of, you know, Clerks the NFT, and then I, Kevin Smith, take what you did and put it in Clerks the NFT part two, I don't see that you're getting anything. I didn't see anywhere in the agreement that you were getting any sort of profit sharing out of that.
It wasn't mentioned.
Right. So,
and even if there is profit sharing, I guess there's less of the costs on Kevin Smith's side of putting that together. And
sure.
You just have here's an assembly of these little vignettes or things that are related to the series or franchise.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Did you also see there was an NFT thing about healthcare and health services? So like NFTs of doctors could give medical advice?
Was it like access to? So part of it is for Kevin Smith thing. Part of it is too that it also represents access to the film just to view it. It's also, and it wasn't made clear that there would be any other way to view this new movie. It wasn't going to have a theatrical release. It's not going to have a streaming release. At least that's what it seemed like from the article that we read. And that it's more going to be partly a digital token to gain access to view that. Is that the same thing in the healthcare space? It would gain access to those professionals?
I think this is another one where I'll send you the link to the BuzzFeed article, Michael, so you can include it in the notes, but it's about TikTok famous doctors getting into NFTs. Mostly the article is just about how it's a confusing mess. But they were imagining that it could be, it's almost to me seemed more of like a metaverse space for healthcare. And I don't understand how the NFT part comes in. Luckily, my new role has nothing to do with this. A very interesting conversation.
Nor does ours. A career services funges through NFTs.
Well, I also am curious, so from NFT to NIL, have name, image, likeness questions for athletes been coming up? Has that been a thing this year so much, or?
I remember we had Autumn, one of our PCAs, come in, and she spoke about that. Which was
awesome.
Was a great episode, and she gave some more specifics about it. But I haven't heard anyone approaching us about that. I think certainly it's been a conversation on the athletic side, and that's still been something
right.
that they've been very upfront and focused on with making sure that their athletes are educated on how that works. But it hasn't really affected us, as far as I know, too much.
No, I haven't heard anything. We know, you know, Autumn said it hadn't quite hit her yet.
That makes sense.
But it's out there and people are aware of it, which I think is good.
Didn't know if your email was getting flooded, Michael, with those name, image, likeness questions.
No, it has not been. It has not been.
Okay.
And, and I'm not saying those deals aren't happening. I think part of it is athletics has been very transparent and they have their own set of Penn guidelines. So I think probably if you're a student athlete and you get approached one of those deals, you're probably going to someone in Penn Athletics to discuss it before you're coming.
That's exactly.
Coming to talk to me.
Yeah. I think one of the challenges is there's only so much they can talk to them about, right? Like at some point it becomes they can't be recommending or giving them explicit advice because of just the nature.
Exactly.
That's right. They can only tell them what is within Penn's guidelines. Yeah.
Exactly. Existing resources, things like that. Yeah. Yeah, that's. I would imagine if I were an athlete, I'd probably go right to my coach, and then I would think about the administrative support in athletics would definitely be my first stops there. But of course, there is a career overlap. So maybe in the next couple of years, you'll be seeing those things on resumes more, thinking about how to talk about them, all that good stuff.
Certainly. I mean, we do have lots of focus on, obviously, the more I'm going to apply to this job thing. But even, was it last week, 2 weeks ago, I did a presentation for the design the last two years, design undergraduate major. And there are a few questions in that group about freelance work and really like working for themselves and how to best either promote themselves or what platforms they can use to be able to sell their art. So that's absolutely something that students are still considering on the more entrepreneurial level.
Right, exactly. Such a parallel there with those opportunities for athletes. And then those, I just think that work is changing so much. It's so interesting. I was looking back at photos from this time last year when I was still at Penn, and I had a picture of Calder, my cat, in his little window hammock, taking a bath. And underneath it, I had sent it as a snap and saved it. And underneath it, I said, I'm going to miss this view when I go back to the office. But instead, I figured out a way to keep that view a year later. So really interesting to think about how work is shifting and how these entrepreneurial opportunities are becoming even more appealing these days.
And is that view a relaxing one, or does he pounce from that location?
Well, so we actually had to take down he just stopped using it, maybe because at one point one of the suction cups fell and kind of startled him. We steered far clear of it for a while. Now his favorite spot is to stand between Paul and his second monitor, which is hilarious. He makes a better cat than a window, but occasionally Paul can get him to shift. So he sits on the closed warm laptop instead. And that's the, that's probably where he is right now. That's the ideal situation.
So Milan, now we're talking about your life as working from home, but like, what's a typical day for you now? Do you have a typical day?
That's a great question. Not really. I work with a number of clients, and with one of the large clients, I have clients within clients.
Clients within clients,
outside of clients. So I think actually that I was actually just talking about this with my friend and colleague who brought me in, with whom I'd worked at the Ritz-Carlton before. And I'm kind of starting to get the feel of this one client's business more than I had in the past. So it's technology related. I had a sense of things, but because I'm involved in multiple projects, I'm hearing the same phrases, I'm hearing the same concerns overlap, and it's informing, each piece is informing the other pieces. And I said to my friend that it really reminds me of being an undergrad with a history and English major and seeing these like random parallels of like, oh, I'm making that connection now because I understand how this thing is similar to this other thing. And then I can, you know, sometimes it's just straightforward of like making a plan for the next step, like kind of a project management situation. But sometimes it's drawing analytical conclusions from those things and making recommendations. So hearing those things across business units or across work streams, it's just been getting more interesting. Whereas at the beginning, it was a little bit more intimidating as those things were less familiar to me as I was getting the hang of things. So there are patterns, like there's projects that are cyclical. So a lot of things work kind of quarterly or every other quarter, where we're doing recruitment of clients and listening to the clients of our clients to hear feedback about their pain points and the things that they're liking, the things that are working well, all that good stuff, and reporting it back. But then there's also these other clients with kind of side projects like this communications presentation that I'm giving next week too. So just enough to keep it interesting, but getting in a flow, which has been great. And it also is like ebbing and flowing in terms of workload. So these days are in a little bit of a holding pattern as recruitment's about to kick off for a few other projects. So it's been nice to kind of catch my breath before getting back into some days that'll be a bit longer, with just pretty cool phone calls, you know, across the world, doing those scheduling of time zones and hearing people's feedback that sometimes is country specific, which I always find really interesting. So yeah, enough variety to keep it interesting.
That's right. And I thought our job was meta sometimes, but you have clients of clients of clients, and you have presentations on presentations. So you're still operating in a very meta space, it sounds like.
Totally. I always felt that way. Like when I returned to career services and reapplied, that's like the most meta thing, like applying within career services. Like I said, I do feel very well versed, but the presentations on presentations, it was actually, that came up for me too when I was a Wharton communications instructor. Giving written feedback on business writing, mm-hmm. was also very meta, because I edited those just like the feed, like the, why am I blanking on this? Like the notes that I would, the responses, the track changes. All of those track changes, I would edit to make sure that they were super concise as well, because I was teaching concision.
Yeah.
The opposite of what I just rambled through. Love a good meta situation.
And so what has been, so it sounds like variety is part of it. What has been refreshing about the new change of pace or the new space that you're in compared to being in education for a while?
So I think that it's mostly just learning new things. So hearing these different processes that the businesses are working through, hearing the clients' concerns, figuring out how to respond to them. It's similar to meeting with students and chatting with them and giving them, you know, feedback or recommendations or pointing them to resources. But I had been doing it at Penn for so long that it started to feel like I was always pointing to the same things. You know, there's that, even like the cyclicality of those conversations you have with the students. So kind of stepping away from that and having all new conversations, all new cycles, just kind of learning new skill sets, thinking about project management is something that I didn't have as much exposure to in career services. So just like stretching my brain. Sometimes I feel it working.
The elasticity.
Exactly. It's like I can feel the new paths forming, and that's been really, really fun. And we also should say we just had a team retreat in Tahoe, which was absolutely amazing. So
that's cool. We don't get to go to Tahoe.
No.
We'll be going to the class of 1949 auditorium, not once, not twice, but three times in the coming month.
Class of 49. That's a good one, though.
It's not bad.
The view in Tahoe is probably better. But yeah, we met the team for the first time in person. Obviously, I had met Jenna in the past as we worked together closely at the Ritz-Carlton. And we'd had a regional retreat in Florida with our the kind of East Coast team, but everyone got together in Tahoe. So minus one of our team members who wasn't able to travel, but meeting everyone in person, meeting spouses and partners, and just having a chance. We did work for sure. We had a few meetings, strategic planning, thinking about next steps, but it was also just a time to like see each other in person and hang out, which was awesome.
Yeah, retreats are often that balance between you don't want to be too strategic. You still want to be celebratory as well.
Exactly. There were no trust falls, but good. We did make dinner together one night, which was
okay. Oh, that's very nice. A trust fall of its own.
Yeah. Exactly. And it was delicious. Well,
nobody got food poisoning. Then it was successful.
Nobody got food poisoning. It was a success. So, yeah.
So are there any... I imagine there are many, because even after 18 years, I still have some. But are there any particular challenges you're facing, you know, your first year in this role?
So the first few months were very intense because, and we have kind of chatted about this, but I was, just as I said, I was so familiar with career services. I wouldn't have to refresh myself about job scans. Those things were at my fingertips. They were coming to me really easily. I felt very adept at what I did. And then switching into a space where everything felt new and I was questioning everything and wondering if my approach was the right one, and balancing that verifying, like, can I just send this to the client, or do I need to make sure that it looks okay before I send to the client? Which I think is hard in general, but is extra hard virtually these days. So I really was empathizing with our students who entered the virtual workspace in the last couple of years. And it was also I just came in at a very busy time. So there were a lot of recruitments processes in flight at once that I picked up kind of on the fly. And then there was, again, multiple clients doing a lot of work for a secondary client someone was on a maternity leave. And it was just a lot of hours. It felt very similar to a hospitality type of work-life balance. So there was a moment of like, is this forever? is this what corporate is like versus higher ed? But it really has been kind of righted. The ship has righted. In between, there was an additional client who came on that had a short deadline that we really pushed to get done. But I was just saying to Paul today, it's like, there's these sprints, which feel great because it's, you're consumed with it. You get a ton of work done. And then, like I said, now I'm in this pause. And the other great thing, this feels very foreign to higher ed, unfortunately, when it was acknowledged. When I was drowning, people saw how much I had on my plate and how many hours I was working. It wasn't just me, the team overall. And we were able to bring on another person. And that person just was able to step in and help immediately. So there wasn't a lot of a small team. So there wasn't a lot of red tape around who, you know, getting a new position approved or anything like that. It was like we were able to make a really strategic, quick decision, pivot quickly and bring someone else on board to help. And that she's been awesome. So, and the work continues. So she's still helping out a lot, but it has, you know, just made everything a little bit less overwhelming than it was at the beginning. And that seems like it'll be the case going forward, which is great.
Well, they say, what is it? They say it takes 6 months to a year in any new job, that almost anything feels overwhelming when you're doing it for the first time. Yeah.
The 4 month mark was hard. And I did hear that. And I still, it was helpful to hear, but I was like, really, is this real? Plus it was, you know, well, so I started in October. So February is not my favorite month in general. So yeah, it's really glad that baseball's back. Yeah. Feeling like, I mean, not today. Today it's cold, but at least it's sunny. So,
but February is a very important holiday. Groundhog's Day.
The best. Well, I knew it was Groundhog's Day, Nadia. I knew you weren't talking about Valentine's Day. Groundhog Day is the best. Oh man. So yeah, that was a long-winded answer, but feeling really good.
Well, it's great. It's great to hear you. It's great to have you back on the show. Your creation here has trundled on without you, but we miss you.
And just interesting to hear how you're describing the real life example of transferable skills and things that we talk about a lot of taking things from hospitality and education into what you do now. So that's just really, really great to hear an actual very specific example of that.
Yeah, for
sure. It's so true. We really just right before this, the meeting I was on was thinking about service trading. So for a client who, you know, service is just so critical. And Jenna and I have that Ritz-Carlton experience of personalized elite service, like really, really good service. So the fact that those things are still playing, and just as you said, Maddie, the hospitality piece is coming back around. So all of the good transferability. And yeah, I still can't believe we're at the end of season 7, guys.
We sure are. And at the end of another school year, as we record this, the last day of classes, as you listen, finals will be underway. Wow. We wish everyone a really best of luck in this finals season. We hope you all have a great summer, a safe summer, and we'll see you back here in August. And season 8 will be starting up sometime in September, I'm sure. And of course, Career Services is here all summer long. If you need us, reach out. We'll be available for appointments in person and virtually. Have a great summer, everyone. We'll see you next time on CS Radio.
This podcast is presented by University of Pennsylvania Career Services, a division of University Life.
It was created by Leland Kushner and J. Michael DeAngelis.
It was produced and hosted by J. Michael DeAngelis and Natty Leach, and mixed and edited by Sam Pasco. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you're listening. See you next time on CS Radio.